The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles, at least at first, from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is the November 2023 issue of the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And I'm going to start with a short article entitled, Preventing Hot Water Burns at Home. It used to be a common practice to warn everyone in the house, I'm going to take a shower, don't flush the toilet. That's because flushing redirects cold water to the toilet, which temporarily limits the amount of cold water available and could cause an unexpected blast of hot water in the shower. When water reaches 140 degrees Fahrenheit, skin can burn in 3 seconds. That's all it takes to burn your hands at the sink or your feet in a too-hot bath. Hot tap water causes around one quarter of all household burns. Young children, older adults, and people with diabetes are particularly at risk. You can reduce the risk of burns by turning down the water heater temperature. Experts recommend a temperature of no higher than 120 degrees. At that temperature, it takes 25 seconds of exposure to get a serious burn. Also, use a thermometer. Your hand isn't always a reliable indicator, so use a thermometer to test the water before stepping in or putting a child in the bathtub. People with diabetes often lose feeling in their fingers and toes, so they might be in a bath long enough to get burned without realizing it. A temperature of about 100 degrees Fahrenheit is considered safe. You can also install a thermostatic mixing valve. These devices keep the hot and cold levels consistent at the faucet, even if water is diverted elsewhere in the home. The water pressure drops instead. While thermostatic mixing valves are now standard with plumbing installations in the United States and some other countries, older homes might not have them. Now here's a couple more rather brief articles in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and they're under the heading of Second Opinion. The first question is, I'm trying to reduce the amount of alcohol I started consuming during the pandemic. Are mocktails a healthier choice? And the answer is, quitting or cutting down on drinking alcohol is a healthy decision. Even one drink a day increases the risk of some cancers, and emerging evidence suggests that even limited drinking increases the risk of dying of some forms of heart and blood vessel disease. Mocktails are cocktails without alcohol. They can be enjoyed by those who can't or prefer not to drink alcohol and want to partake in a celebration or social event. Mocktails are safer for people who are pregnant, taking medications, or avoiding substances. They're less expensive and also hydrating and won't leave you feeling hungover the next day. They're also discreet. They don't draw attention to the fact that you're not drinking alcohol. We generally have very little concern about these type of drinks, says Dr. Tyler Osterley, an addiction psychiatrist at the Mayo Clinic. They're healthier alternative to alcoholic drinks. The sugar is a drawback, but it's generally considered preferable over alcohol. When deciding if a mocktail is a healthier choice, compare it to what you otherwise would have had. If your usual was a 100-calorie glass of white wine, a virgin margarita with sparkling water, juices and syrups would likely be higher in calories and sugar. You might want to look for an alternative drink lower in added sugar. There's a wide range of mocktail choices. A mocktail made of sparkling water, muddled strawberries, and a mint leaf can be refreshing, delicious, healthy, and light. If you have any medical conditions, there might be some additional issues. People with diabetes, prediabetes, or obesity might need to limit mocktails due to sugar content. People taking certain medications like statins calcium channel blockers, and blood thinners will want to limit or avoid grapefruit juice. Dr. Osterley advises against non-alcoholic beers, wines, or spirits for people recovering from alcohol use disorder. These drinks sometimes contain small amounts of alcohol, but they can be an option if you don't have a substance use disorder and are still looking to reduce your alcohol consumption. Question. I'm having a knee replacement in a few weeks. My surgeon is asking that I sign a consent form before the operation. What should I know about this document? A consent form is intended to make sure you know in advance the type of care you'll receive, the intended outcome, your alternatives, and the risk involved. No procedure is without risk, which is why it's important to understand the risk relative to the potential benefit. Consent forms are common requirements at hospitals and clinics for people who are undergoing care or participating in research. The federal government, through Medicare, requires that people receiving some types of care be informed about it and sign off attesting to that knowledge. Many states have similar laws. Be aware that consent forms come in various levels of complexity. Simple consent forms may be required to do low-risk procedures, like a skin biopsy or a simple injection. More detailed informed consent forms are reserved for complex procedures, like surgery, cancer care, and organ transplantation. Although people often focus on the signature that's required, that's just a piece of it. Equally important is the ongoing dialogue between you and your healthcare team. The content should be communicated in language you best understand. If English isn't your first language, ask if the document is available in your preferred language, or if a translator is available, and you should be allowed as much time as needed to come to a clear understanding. The information often can be communicated by videos, apps, or other electronic media, and you're encouraged to request information in the format that's most accessible for you. The consent form is a legal acknowledgement of your satisfaction with the communication. You are entitled and encouraged to ask questions if you don't understand any part of it. Now we're going to go on with the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and this is a supplement to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of November 2023, and it's talking about an important subject, so I thought I would go over it. It's entitled High Blood Pressure. Doctor-approved remedies that work. High blood pressure, known medically as hypertension, feels no different from normal blood pressure. That's why medical experts call the condition a silent killer. It's also why a member of your healthcare team typically measures your blood pressure at medical visits. As the automatic blood pressure cuff inflates and deflates, an electronic tool called a sphygmomanometer senses the vibration in the walls of the major artery in the upper arm. The device then displays those vibrations as blood pressure readings on a digital screen. When diagnosed and treated early, high blood pressure can often be brought under control with minimal effects. When left untreated, blood pressure tends to rise over time, making it more difficult to control and serious complications more likely. For many people, the first symptom is a heart attack or stroke, says Dr. Gary Schwartz, a hypertension expert at Mayo Clinic in Rochester and author of the recently released book, Mayo Clinic on High Blood Pressure. To understand high blood pressure, it helps to think of a garden hose. When you turn on the spigot, water surges into the hose. If the nozzle remains closed, pressure builds inside the hose. That's not necessarily a problem in the short term, but if you keep the spigot on and the nozzle closed for months, the constant pressure is going to damage the hose. Your blood vessels behave similarly, with your heart working like the faucet. Every heartbeat thrusts oxygenated blood into the aorta. The main blood vessel that carries blood away from the heart. This action propels 11 pints of blood through your body's intricate vascular system. As each heartbeat pushes blood throughout your vessels, it creates a force against your artery walls. This is your systolic pressure. As your heart rests between beats, the pressure inside your arteries momentarily ebbs. This is your diastolic pressure. If the pressure inside your blood vessels is too high for months or years, it can damage your blood vessels, which become less elastic. Stiff arteries resist blood flow, which triggers your heart to beat more forcefully. The added force then raises the pressure even more, creating a vicious cycle. Several organs and chemicals work together to keep blood pressure from rising too high. The key players are the brain. This is your blood pressure control center. The brain sends signals throughout the body in response to physical factors like diet, exercise, obesity, and stress. Then there's the heart. The speed and strength of your heartbeat influences your blood pressure level. Faster, more vigorous beats raise the pressure in your arteries. Slower, less vigorous beats lower the pressure. Smooth muscle lines your arteries, helping them to expand and control as blood flows through them. If your blood vessels narrow, blood pressure goes up. If they widen or dilate, blood pressure drops. Then there's the adrenal glands. These small glands sit on top of each kidney. Among other substances, the adrenal glands secrete the fight or flight hormones, epinephrine and norepinephrine. These hormones cause the arteries to narrow and the heart to pump harder. Then there's the kidneys. In addition to doing other jobs, your kidneys balance sodium and water in your body. Having too much sodium and water raises blood pressure, and too little lowers it. The kidneys also produce renin, which leads to the production of angiotensin II. This causes blood vessels to narrow. Then there's the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Renin works on angiotensinogen, a protein which triggers the formation of angiotensin II. This substance narrows the blood vessels, raising the pressure. Angiotensin II also stimulates the release of the hormone aldosterone. Increased aldosterone causes the kidneys to retain more sodium and water. Too much pressure over the years can damage the walls of your arteries, making them thick and less elastic. The medical term for this thick, stiff artery is arteriosclerosis, or hardened arteries. High blood pressure also speeds up the buildup of fatty deposits in the arteries. The walls of your blood vessels are lined with a thin layer of cells called the endothelium. When this inner wall is damaged, cells often clump together at the injury site. They invade and scar deeper layers of the artery walls. Large accumulations of these fatty deposits are called plaques. Over time, the plaques harden and reduce blood flow through the arteries. Organs and tissues served by these narrowed arteries often don't get enough blood. The lack of blood flow can damage organs and tissues throughout the body, but the brain, eyes, heart, and kidneys are most affected. As arteries harden and narrow, the heart pumps harder to maintain adequate blood flow. The resulting increased pressure leads to further blood vessel damage. Plaques cause other problems. As blood flows past the blockage, plaques may trigger blood clots to form. In addition, inflammation often occurs in areas around plaques. Sometimes plaques break apart, and the arteries combine with fresh blood clots to block the artery. Debris also may travel in the bloodstream and lodge in a smaller artery. When a blood vessel is damaged, part of the wall may bulge outward, causing an aneurysm. An aneurysm commonly occurs in a brain artery or in the lower part of the body's main artery called the abdominal aorta. If an aneurysm leaks or bursts, it's a life-threatening problem. All of this can lead to problems throughout the body. Damaged arteries in the brain can cause stroke and dementia. Narrowed vessels around the heart raise the risk of heart attack. Damaged vessels in the eyes can cause blood and fluid to leak into tissue in the back of the eye and the optic nerve. This leakage may cause swelling that leads to vision loss. Reduced blood flow in the kidneys can interfere with the removal of waste from the blood. This can lead to kidney failure. Certain factors put you at greater risk of high blood pressure, many of which you can't control. Black Americans are more likely to develop high blood pressure than other Americans. Older adults are at higher risk than younger people. Genetics put some people at more risk too. You can't control your race, your age, or your family history, but you can take steps to reduce blood pressure risk. One important step is to lose 10 pounds. Weight gain increases the heart's workload by increasing the length of blood vessels in the body. More blood circulating through the arteries requires the heart to pump more forcefully. Obesity is associated with increased activity in the fight or flight nervous system and higher aldosterone, which can raise blood pressure. If you're overweight, losing as few as 10 pounds can make a big difference. Cut 250 to 500 calories daily through healthier eating, or burn that amount with increased activity. Even small changes like replacing high-calorie snacks with fruits and vegetables can help to lower your weight and blood pressure. Also, you should exercise 150 minutes a week. Regular physical activity can lower systolic blood pressure by 3 to 6 millimeters of mercury and diastolic blood pressure by 4 to 12 millimeters. If you're genetically at risk of developing high blood pressure, that difference is enough to prevent the condition. If you have existing stage 1 blood pressure, this drop may be enough for you to be able to avoid taking medication. Get at least 150 minutes of moderate aerobic activity a week, or get at least 75 minutes of vigorous aerobic activity a week. You also can get an equal mix of the two types. Aim to exercise most days of the week. For even more health benefits, get 300 minutes a week or more of moderate aerobic activity. Exercising this much may help with weight loss or keeping off lost weight. Move as often as possible. Overwhelming research finds that too much sedentary time, like watching TV, working on a computer, or traveling in an automobile, can contribute to many health problems, even if you're very active and fit. Common recreational activities like walking, bicycling, and dancing aren't enough. You'll also want to move around as often as possible. Routine activities like mowing the lawn, gardening, washing the car, cleaning the house, and climbing stairs can help. The more you move about during the day, the less you sit and the more calories you burn. Also, you need to cut back on sodium. For some sodium-sensitive people, excess salt intake worsens high blood pressure. On top of that, blood pressure-lowering medications don't work as effectively when you consume a high-sodium diet, whether you are salt-sensitive or not. Although the salt shaker on the table gets a bad reputation, it's important to remember that the bulk of sodium consumption comes from processed foods. Limit your sodium intake to 2,300 milligrams a day. If possible, consider going lower. In one study, people who consume no more than 1,500 milligrams of sodium daily experienced the greatest reduction in blood pressure. Also, you should limit caffeine. Caffeine blocks a hormone that keeps your arteries widened. It also may cause the adrenal glands to release more adrenaline, increasing blood pressure. Limit your consumption of caffeine to no more than 2 cups of coffee a day. Don't smoke. The chemicals in tobacco can damage the artery walls, making them more prone to the buildup of plaque. Nicotine also increases heart rate and causes the blood vessels to narrow, which raises blood pressure. The carbon monoxide in cigarette smoke replaces oxygen in the blood, making the heart work harder to get enough oxygen to the body's cells. On the plus side, the beneficial effects of quitting smoking start to make themselves known within 20 minutes of your last cigarette. You should reduce stress. If life stress occurs often enough, it can damage your blood vessels, heart, and kidneys. One way to reduce stress is to fire up your gratitude. Focus on what you're grateful for each day. Increases in happiness, improving in sleep, boosts immunity, decreases your risk of disease, and reduces stress. Consider writing down 3 things you're grateful about each day. Limit your alcohol. Drinking can damage the heart and other organs over time. Heavy drinkers who cut back to moderate levels can lower systolic blood pressure by 7 to 12 millimeters of mercury and diastolic by 3 millimeters. If you drink alcohol, the best advice is to do so only in moderation. For most men, moderate drinking means no more than 2 alcoholic drinks daily. For women, the limit is 1 drink daily. 1 drink is 12 fluid ounces of regular beer, 5 fluid ounces of wine, or 1.5 fluid ounces of hard liquor or distilled spirits. The article goes on to mention that there are some medications that can raise blood pressure. And those medications include non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil or Motrin, appetite suppressants, oral and nasal decongestants, steroids, antidepressants, immunosuppressants like cyclosporin and tacrolimus, COX-2 inhibitors like celecoxib, and then there's a few others as well. The article goes on to mention other things that you can do to prevent high blood pressure, and one of these is to follow the DASH diet. The best diet for lowering blood pressure is the DASH diet, which means dietary approach to stop hypertension. The eating plan focuses on foods known to lower blood pressure and minimizes foods known to raise it. The diet is rich in fiber, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. It limits sodium, saturated fat, and cholesterol, red meat, sweets, and sugary beverages. One particular study compared people following the DASH diet to those following a typical American diet or a diet that promoted the consumption of fruits and vegetables but did not limit dairy products or fat. People following the DASH diet reduced their blood pressure in 2 weeks. The DASH diet also lowered levels of low-density lipoprotein. If you're interested in trying the DASH diet, see what to eat on the DASH diet. And then there's a rather complicated attachment that describes the things that you're supposed to eat on the DASH diet. And some of the things, just to highlight a few examples, you should eat whole grains, like a half a cup of cooked grains or cereal. You should eat vegetables. You should eat fruit 4 to 5 times a day. You should eat fat-free, low-fat dairy. You should eat lean protein, like 1 ounce of cooked meat, poultry, or fish. You should eat nuts, seeds, and legumes, like peanut butter, or a half a cup of nuts, or a half a cup of cooked beans. You should eat fats and oils, like a teaspoon of margarine daily. And you can eat sweets, but you shouldn't eat any more than the equivalent of 1 tablespoon of sugar per day. Finally, the article mentions drug therapy as another approach to high blood pressure. Drug therapy can be very effective, and most people are not bothered by side effects. These drugs can allow you to live well with controlled blood pressure. Finding the right medications or combination of drugs may take time. If your initial prescription doesn't optimally lower your blood pressure, your healthcare team may substitute a different one or add a second medication to your prescription. Together, 2 or more low-dose drugs may lower your blood pressure as well as or better than one drug alone at a full dose. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.